So, Peter Welch, what about the Trans-Pacific trade deal? You know, the left of the party has never been in love with NAFTA. And here we go again. There will be people who will say, you know, we're giving away too much. It costs us in jobs over here. What do you say?
Well, I'm a skeptic of the benefits, certain benefits that are being promised by the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal. You know, the question on a trade deal is, there's three things. Will it increase the gross domestic product? It probably will. Trade generally does that. Will it increase corporate profits? It probably will. Trade deals usually do that. And the third question that tends to be overlooked is the one that I think these days is really essential. Will it increase wages and employment in New York, in Vermont, in our country? And that's really how I'm going to make my final decision on this Trans-Pacific Partnership. Does it appear to me, on the basis of all of the provisions, that it's going to give a wage pay increase, a pay raise to folks in the Vermont, New York region and around the country? It's one thing, and you know, we're seeing that corporate profits have never been higher, but we haven't had a pay raise in 20 years. And some of that is because of this globalization. And, you know, I get a little frustrated when we're having this discussion about the trade deal and just putting it in, quote, geopolitical terms, where who's going to make the rules for trade, whether it's us or the Chinese. That's kind of an appealing argument, but at the end of the day, it's a certain quality of abstractness to it, because if you're in Bennington, you're in Albany, and you just lost your job, the trade deal, your question should be, how's this going to help me get a job? How's it going to help me get a pay increase so that I can pay my own bills? And that's really my view, where the focus has to be on the analysis of the agreement.
So the president is for it. There are many congressmen who have some real skepticism about the whole thing. Does that drive a wedge in the Democratic Party?
On this issue, it does. You know, right now, President Obama, since the election, I think is enjoying enormous popularity among the Democrats. People are quite pleased with his energy and his executive actions and proposals. And he's got a real bounce in his step. And there's an understanding that President Obama, you know, frankly, like most presidents, promotes trade agreements. And a major consideration, it seems, for presidents, Republican or Democrat, are what they see as the geopolitical advantages of a trade agreement. And when you're the president, that's a major area of your responsibility. When you're a member of Congress or a senator, you know, you're representing folks who want, have a job but aren't getting paid enough, who want a job but can't get one. And when I'm hearing from people, if we get into a discussion about a trade agreement, they want to know how it's going to help them get better employment or better wages. So that's really the bottom line for a lot of us in the House and Senate. I don't think that it's a wedge with the Democrats in Obama. It's just understood that he's got his position, and all of us are going to have to make our own independent assessment.
So let me ask you a global, local political question, if there is such a thing, and that is, if the Democrats, who do well in presidential elections, better than in the by-elections, do well, really well, they get a good candidate, let's say it's Hillary, let's say she runs well, then what are the chances, you think, that you could take back the House of Representatives?
I think it's uphill. You know, the Senate, I think, for us to take back is much more within reach.
Yep.
But we've got a lot of gerrymandered districts.
Yep.
That are really tough for Democrats. So that's a stretch, I think, given the numbers that we face right now. But we've got a new DCCC director, Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee director, Ben Ray Lujan, from New Mexico, and he's got an enormous amount of energy and a positive attitude, and he's recruiting good candidates. So whatever the outcome, he's given it our best, and sure would make life better for a lot of us here.
We're all scared to death about cybersecurity, Peter Welch. We now see that, you know, the Russians, we think, the Chinese, we think, have gotten into our stuff, or reading the president's messages and everything else. I'm ready to go back to pen and paper. What about you?
I like that. Well, I use a BlackBerry, and people regard that as pen and paper around here. But, you know, it is a serious issue, both from the military espionage side, but also just from a commercial activity side. You know, there's an enormous focus on the part of hackers to get our financial information through these data breaches that they manage when they go into Target or possibly Anthem Healthcare. And it's actually why I've been working on a bipartisan bill with Marsha Blackburn and Mike Burgess from Texas on data breach and data notification that would be focused on trying to really improve our situation dramatically.
So what's the fix? So what's the fix, Peter?
I think there's two fixes. One, you've got to have best practices that are required by the holders of the data. Secondly, you've got to have good and prompt notification when people are hacked so they can take appropriate preventive or protective measures. But some of the fixes are going to be technical, well beyond your ability or mine to figure out. It'll take folks who know that computer world. And somehow, some way, we have to keep one step ahead of the hackers.
They seem pretty bright. I mean, I don't like them. I hate them. But they do seem to be one step ahead of us half the time.
They look, criminals can be smart, and a lot of them are. You know, some are dumb, but we're not so lucky that they're all dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a very frightening thing to watch. And then finally, I want to talk to you about something that is very close to not my heart, but Joe Donahue, our roundtable maven, craft beers. That's coming up big in Vermont, isn't it?
You know, it's huge in Vermont. Actually, I think per capita, we're like the second or third most plentiful craft brewer scene in the country. And I have a lot of friendly arguments with some of my colleagues, including Peter DeFazio from Oregon. But we've got 41 craft breweries in Vermont. Well, many of the beers, like Heady Topper, have won national awards. And what's tremendous about it is that it's really part of the local food movement and the local economy movement. You know, you've got these folks who have been in a John Kemich and his wife, from Heady Topper, John and Kim. They just had a passion for it, and they use the best ingredients. They have a production process where they use their spent grain after they've used it to brew their beer. They give that to local farmers who then feed it to their animals. So it's part of that, I think, ethic that you're seeing really pushed by a lot of younger people about a local economy and having quality food products, and in this case, it's beer.
Okay, but we only have a minute, Peter. But I want to leave you with this final question. You know, I'm a bit of a health nut. But now we got beer, we got ice cream, we got cheese, and we have heart attacks.
Well, beer's good for you. You know, we're talking moderation. You know, ice cream. You know, you gotta have a little room in your diet for when that's an essential food group. You know, you can't overdo it. But you know, Ben and Jerry's. Pretty good.
But beer can be fattening and fatten you right up, and those are the people who are at risk.
And you know what?
What?
You exercise so you can eat.
I do that.
That's good.
I don't know.
You can enjoy some of these fine things in life.
Peter Welch, we love you, and we love having you with us. It's always great fun, and I always enjoy our conversations. Thanks so much for doing it.
Thank you.